Let me ask you about this pledge because not very many people know about it, and that's understandable because people really have to want to understand the issue here, and many don't. But it was on a program on, I think it was Al Jazeera or
No, it was Press
Press
TV.
TV. Right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Press
And it was
TV.
a girlfriend of mine, Marzieh Hashemi, who is a US citizen who lives in Iran. It was in her interview that I first disclosed it. And it really, really hit them hard because it was sort of like the secret about the former member of Congress saying, I don't know if he's former or if he's current, who said they buy their committee assignments kind of thing. So it was like accepted. And the reason I believe it was accepted is basically all of political money in the US. Well, now you've got more people involved, but the Zionist Israel First money is what underpins the Democratic Party. And it used to be, to a lesser extent, the Republican Party, but now the Republican Party and the Democratic Parties, both. And then if you look at political action committees, who finances them? Because it doesn't matter. So, like in the PAC book, you'll have a little divider. It says ideological PACs. And under ideological PACs, that's where they put the pro-Israel PACs. But no, that's not how it works. The way it works is that the pro-Israel money is in your environmental PAC. It's in your labor union PACs. It's in your corporate PACs. It's across the board. And the person who really identified this and put it on the congressional record is Gus Savage. That's why, if you go to my website, you'll see Gus Savage on the front page because he tells the whole story about how he was targeted by the Israel First contingent and the tactic that they used against him. They didn't get him the first time, but they got him the second time.
Yes, another great American.
And I'll tell you something else, like
Yes.
Rod Blagojevich. Blagojevich is in prison today. These people play for keeps. He's in prison not because he had a conversation, it's because of his appointment to the Senate. The Israel First people, they had their candidate that he was supposed to appoint to the US Senate, and he didn't do that. And if you'll recall, what he appointed was a black man. And that was not a part of the script, and they sought their revenge. Now, who's going to say that in public? But that is the underlying reason for his prosecution. You can go to Jim Trafficant. I mean, they've got a whole trail of people who have been in prison. You can go to Bob Ney from Ohio. You can go to Kurt Weldon. He didn't go to prison, but he got kicked out with an FBI raid just because he talked about 911. So you've got a trail of detritus, the carcasses of politically dead politicians, which my carcass is there as well for the vultures to feed on. And that's why when the signing of the pledge, nobody said anything about it, but I was offended by it. And my entire 12 years in Congress was bumping up against these people who controlled everything. They literally controlled the budget. They controlled, well, the budget process, what got in the budget, what got a line item. And it was just a horrible experience for me. It was like, what do you call that? Trench warfare. Every day fighting just for a position that should have come naturally as a part of trying to take our country back and do the right thing for our country.
Many people have heard the term ZOG, ZOG, Zionist Occupied Government. Is it ZOG?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure that folks who aren't up to speed on these matters, when they hear a term like that, they would look at the person who would say it and think that they're off their rocker and they're a conspiracy theorist. But yeah, you were there for 12 years, so if
Yeah.
anyone would know it, you would know it.
Which, of course, is what makes me dangerous because
Absolutely.
I can run around these folk. I can sniff them out. If there's a smell test, I can pass it, right? And therein lies the problem.
Exactly. This particular show with your friend on Press TV, You said, well, every candidate for Congress at that time had a pledge, given a pledge to sign. And I was new on the scene. And so the pledge had Jerusalem as a capital city, the military supreme, and she cut you off and she said, American Congress people have to sign this pledge. My first question is, did the pledge take the form of physical paper?
Yes, the pledge was a piece of paper that was faxed to my home, which is where I was receiving all of the faxes in the early days of my candidacy back in 1992. And now, of course, with me having been strewn everywhere in my possessions as well, I don't really have a single place. So I don't have that physical sheet of paper. But what I do have is the, I think it's CUFI, C-U-F-I, which is a UK organization that, guess what, requires MPs to sign a pledge. So I can't show the U.S. one, but there's a U.K. one.
Wow. So the pledge was an actual physical piece of paper. Do you know who actually sent it over to you?
Yes, it was from APAC.
That's called chutzpah.
Yes.
Then you said if you don't sign the pledge, you don't get money. So, for example, it was almost like water torture for me. I love that. My parents observed this. I would get a call, and the person on the other end of the phone would say, I want to do a fundraiser for you. How many times did this happen separately where you would get a call from an individual wanting to do a fundraiser?
Many times. Two or three, four times. No more than that, though. But, you know, this is a huge campaign, and this is a huge thing if you get someone who wants to do a fundraiser for you. And then the final one, the final time that they reared their ugly head was, I can't remember now if I was already in Congress or if it was still that first campaign. No, it must have been that I was already in. So I was running for re-election. And of course, I had not signed the pledge. I got away with not signing the pledge even after I was elected the first time. I was able to get Tea with Tipper event coordinated. And what happened? Okay, the Tea with Tipper, and maybe the day before, I was presented with this demand to say I'm not anti-Semitic. So I was forced to write something on a sheet of paper that I wasn't anti-Semitic. Invitations had gone out. The event was set. But you see, the problem that I had was that the event was set to be at the home of an Israel firster. That was my mistake. I left myself open to the blackmail, and they used it.
Right. Well, you can't know everything, especially in that swamp.
I just didn't know.
You lasted 12 years without ever signing the pledge, right?
Yeah, except that I did have to write that thing under duress in order to get the Tipper Gore thing done like the next day. But other than that, no, I never signed the pledge. I never went to Israel on those trips either.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
For not doing that. The people, the three or four times that they contacted you to do a fundraiser for you, and of course, as you said, two or three weeks later, they said, oh yeah, hey, did you sign the pledge?
Right.
Do you know who they were? Do you remember who these individuals were, or at least their positions in this Zionist power structure?
One, I kind of remember as being the owner of a club or a nightclub or a restaurant, or, you know, these were people who were of means, who ordinarily would not support a black girl from Georgia. I mean, you know, these are Georgia people with all that that means. They would not be the kind of people who would be supporting me for a congressional seat. But they did, provided that I accepted what was being presented to me without asking any questions. Unfortunately for me, I never did that. I always was asking questions. And so I had one Jewish friend, really. I wouldn't even call it a supporter. I would call him a friend. He gave me my first job. He was friends with my dad, just like family friend. Well, when this thing happened and I'm in Congress and I'm not cooperating, I'm not signing the pledge, then what happened was my friend said, okay, I'm going to try and broker a peace between Cynthia and quote unquote the community. So he arranged a meeting This was all the highfalutin, the ADL person, the AJC person, all of the highfalutin people in the metro Atlanta area. We had a home and everybody came to the home, and my friend did a valiant job of trying to defend and protect me. He said, he told them, look, you've got to respect her intellect. She's a thinker and you need to respect her. That's what his plea was. Just respect her mind, respect her ability to think and her desire to think and not just be a robot. And he ended his plea by saying, you can't treat her like you treat the help. This is what my friend said. And so the meeting ended. There was a little child there. He was about 6 years old. My congressional staff were present at the meeting. They heard this as well. And I thanked the little boy for hosting me in his home. And he said to me, this is 6 years old, anything for Israel. And me and my staffers, we just looked at each other because we weren't meeting about Israel. But the way this was interpreted, this meeting was really about Israel. And so that's what caused my dad to say, what does Stone Mountain, Georgia have to do with Israel? And that was the question that we raised. What does Stone Mountain, which is the place that I represented, have to do with Israel? And clearly, because of the way I was treated and the fact that I lost the election, well, we'll just say it was tampered with. But at the end of the day, the election result was not favorable to me. My conclusion is that, one, Israel has everything to do with the politics of Stone Mountain, because the interests of Israel can override the interests of the people of Stone Mountain in the United States. That's point number one. And then point number two is that the way the system has been manipulated or rigged to work in the U.S. is that I will not be successful as a member of Congress unless I love Israel more than I love my constituency. That's the way it works in the U.S. now.
I just wanted to ask, Congresswoman, you said...
Cynthia.
Cynthia, thank you. What your friend cut you off a couple times, and I don't think she did it on purpose. She was probably just so excited about what you were saying, but you said that the pledge consisted of, first, that Jerusalem is the capital.
Yes.
That military superiority of Israel, economic...
Yes.
Do you remember exactly what the items were on that pledge?
I only remember those first three. There were either five or seven. I can't remember. But there were five or seven points. And I remember Jerusalem is the capital city, the military superiority of Israel. And remember at the time, George Herbert Walker Bush, well, his tenure as president had been cut short because he was demanding the end of the settlements. There was this housing money that the Israelis wanted, and he was withholding it, $10 million, or probably could have been more than that. But it was some amount of money for housing, and George Herbert Walker Bush got in trouble. And so as a result of that experience, that's how these items were making it onto the pledge, because of previous controversies that had arisen. What happened with Jerusalem, what Trump did, Jerusalem, the Congress passed the Jerusalem as a capital city law a long time ago. So every president would just waive recognition of it. But that was the status all along. All Trump did was to recognize that it was the law of the land. And of course, in so recognizing, raising the contradictions that exist and that were created by this position, by this U.S. position, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining that. I wanted to know how many there were.
There were about seven. There were more than three. The third one that I remember was about keeping the levels of aid consistent with Israel's request, so that I would not vote for aid levels to go down.
Wow. In other words, do everything that Israel wants.
Yes. You don't get a vote in Congress that controversial, 400 to one or two, or 400, usually it's 400 to nothing. You don't get that by accident. Those are purposeful votes. Say in the Senate, when Ben Cardin has a bill, you know you better vote for that bill. Back in my day, it was Tom Lantos. Tom Lantos, what's the guy's name? Elliot Engel is still there. Jerry Nadler is still there. A lot of them are still there. You knew when there would be certain point people. And when those point people, Jerry Ackerman was one of them back in the day, when they authored legislation, and then this came out later in a real concrete example, you knew that that was AIPAC speaking. And if AIPAC was talking, they were also in the room taking notes on who said what during the deliberations of the bill. And you didn't want to be on that side. AIPAC also was in the room monitoring who was signing the letters, like, you know, you send a letter to the president saying, I urge you to do X and Y. And those letters were generated by AIPAC. The legislation was generated by AIPAC. Then what happened was, I think it was Tom Daschle's office. No. Not Tom Daschle. It was Gephardt, I believe. I believe it was Gephardt. He might have still been there. Maybe it was whoever succeeded him. It was probably Steny Hoyer. But anyway, what happened during the time I was there, or maybe just after I left, there was a letter or bill or something that AIPAC had sent over to one of the congressional offices, and the congressional office was not savvy enough to erase the original title, which was AIPAC. So that's how then that became like a little mini firestorm. But there is no such thing as a real firestorm with AIPAC because they are able to suppress everything.
Right. I know I said Congresswoman, and I like to say that, but I'll say, Cynthia, thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this. I greatly appreciate it, and you are a great American.
Well, thank you so much for that, because that's all I've ever tried. That's all I've ever tried to be, is a full American under the protection of the Constitution.